Delma, thank you so much for coming here today. I'm so grateful to have you. And, you know, when I think of you, and I think the reason why we got along so well when we first connected at that dinner was because you have an aspect of yourself that's about discipline and you have an aspect of yourself that's about love. And I try to connect those two as much as I can with everything I do. And I think I just sense that in you. And I think that's why we got along so well at that creator dinner we went to.
I appreciate that. That's really interesting. And then I want to kind of interrogate whether you think those are opposing things, because I've never framed it in that way before.
Opposing things. I mean, they could be, right? If you really are so disciplined with something that you... But I think they're connected. Yeah. And I think when you really love something, you want to be disciplined with it.
I love that, because one of my favorite quotes of all time is, it goes something like, discipline is remembering what you want. So it's not about like being, you know, gritty or, I mean, it involves that, but it's really ultimately about what do I want long-term? It's about like long-term versus short-term thinking. So that's what that reminds me of. I like that.
Yeah. So I think one of the places that might be good to frame the conversation is your first 100-day streak on YouTube. And particularly, I think it was day 87 when you went to the hospital but didn't stop. Take us back to that moment.
Okay, wow, you really did your homework. So I started doing these 100-day challenges because, I mean, at the time I thought about it as sort of a discipline thing. I thought about it as I want to put myself out there. I want to kind of explore the edges of my comfort zone. But I think probably in hindsight, I can see that I was being drawn to creating content in general and just didn't know where to start. So I thought I might as well just start somewhere and just get used to it, even if I don't know what I'm doing, and it'll maybe lead somewhere. And it did, but not with YouTube. But I decided to start doing YouTube because I consider myself a writer. I am very comfortable with words. I'm also comfortable with speaking, but I'm not comfortable on camera, at least at the time I wasn't. So I thought, okay, this is going to be a fun, like difficult, challenging thing to do. And it was also a little bit of exposure therapy, because putting yourself out there, posting random videos about yourself when you're not even sure what you want to say, and, you know, having your friends see that, or your friends from high school or whatever, that can feel very exposing and uncomfortable in a way that I actually felt drawn to. I wanted to expose myself to that because I figured, okay, I want to share my ideas. No matter what I do in life, I want to get to the point where I have some sort of platform to disseminate ideas that I think are valuable. And if I want to get used to doing that, I have to start posting content somehow and getting comfortable with this. So I started posting on YouTube. I just randomly had the idea to do this challenge because I was inspired by one of my friends, actually somebody I used to date who is now a friend, a long time ago, was doing this kind of fitness sort of like pull-up challenge. And I was inspired by that. And also this artist named El Luna would do these regular 100-day challenges. So I thought, I'm going to do that. Started doing it for about the first 50 days. I felt so nervous. Every time I hit publish, I felt so cringe and so awkward. But then I kind of got into the flow of it, and you eventually get over it. But I was hospitalized for a kidney infection. This is becoming a very long story. But basically, I was hospitalized for a kidney infection. I was in Miami. I was traveling a lot. I wasn't sleeping a lot. My immune system was down. I randomly got a kidney infection. I thought it was COVID. So my partner at the time was like, let's get you to a hospital. I was like, no, I'm just going to like sleep this off. And it was getting worse and worse and worse. And so he was like, babe, let's get you to the emergency room. And I get there and they're like, this isn't COVID. You're going into sepsis. You have sepsis. Your body is like very infected.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God. And then they gave me the wrong antibiotics. I was in so much pain. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't eating. It was a whole mess. But I was determined to not give up my streak because I was on day 80 something. I was towards the end of the challenge. So I whipped out my phone. I was in a hospital gown with all these like wires and things coming out of me, right? All these things that were like measuring my heartbeat or whatever. And I looked like a hot mess, but I was determined to finish it. So I whipped out my phone and posted on IGTV on Instagram a video. I was like, hi guys, so I'm in the emergency room. And I posted it, and all my friends were like, oh my God, are you okay? And I think they probably thought I was crazy, but I just kept going. I was in the hospital for probably like 5 or 6 days, and I just kept going. And at the end of it, I felt really proud. And that's what actually set things up for me to go on TikTok, because then I just felt more liberated from the fear of what people are going to think about me when I put myself out there online. So it all kind of led to here.
What inspired you so strongly that you couldn't stop?
I think there's magic in doing something consistently every day for whatever number of days. I think there's so much power in consistency, which is ironic because I'm very not consistent with my own podcast, which you know because you remind me about it. But in general, I think even if it's not about the thing that you're producing, the fact that you are maintaining consistency, I think, has this compounding effect. It's almost like, you know, I always think about Warren Buffett saying his quotes about, you know, things compounding and like the magic of that. I don't know what the exact quote is, but I actually think that also applies to personal development. I think when you do something every day, even if it, whether it's like a fitness thing or, you know, posting content, it's just the fact of showing up every day kind of transforms you in a way. And it also makes you develop a certain kind of confidence in yourself because you know you can show up for yourself, something that you commit to. And I think when you know that, it's so empowering. And I didn't have that before. I don't consider myself a very disciplined person. I'm a very like free-spirited, freewheeling person. So that's where I felt like I was weak. So I wanted to actually directly kind of cultivate that muscle.
How did you figure out that you were weak at that aspect of your life?
Because I'm just so kind of go with the flow. I do what I feel like. I don't like doing what other people tell me to do, which is why I haven't been gainfully employed in a long time. I was at Google for a very brief stint and I was like, I don't like doing what these people tell me to do. I don't want to sell ads. So I think I've always just been a very sort of autonomous person who likes doing her own thing. And I also think that I went to a school, Brown really shaped me. I went to Brown and there you get to take whatever class you want outside of your major. You kind of get to do whatever you want. And I think that that can be a gift, but also it didn't prepare me for the real world where a lot of people kind of sort of settle for a life where you have to do certain things as an adult, right? And obviously I have that too. I show up for the things that count, but to the extent that I can, I like to have a lot of autonomy. And I also saw that that had a weak side. I think a lot of our defining traits can be a double-edged sword. So I see that as part of my creativity and inspiration, where that stuff comes from. But I also see it as potentially not that great because I am not very consistent unless I really force myself to be.
Okay, so let's say we have somebody who's really disciplined now and they're listening to this and they want to get more into that free-spirited, go with the flow. Aspect to their life. What would you recommend to get them started on that path?
I would say learn how to tune into yourself and to your intuition. If you can be really attuned to your moment to moment needs and desires and inspiration, and if you can learn to trust that and follow it, I think magic can happen. And that's also part of how, like, I love that you actually framed it as discipline and love, because that's how I got to where I got to now, right? This is my dream job. I get to nerd out about business on TikTok online and get paid for it. That's ridiculous. And the way that I got here is both. I needed that discipline to kickstart things. And I still post almost every day. I post several videos, you know, a week. And I also do it from a place of inspiration or love. You could put it that way. And you do need both. So I would say people who are really, really disciplined are stronger and on that side. But the way you can balance it so you can unlock and harness the power of both together is to, I think, learn to really deeply tune into yourself. And I think things like mindfulness or meditation can help with that. But I don't actually think most people are good at being attuned to their deepest truth or their desires or what they want and what they like, who they are even.
How do you get good at that?
I think mindfulness helped. I think a spiritual practice helped. I think making it an explicit intention helped. I also personally see it as part of my own definition of self-love. My definition of self-love is very much about being attuned to yourself and saying yes when you want to say yes, saying no when you want to say no. And it's actually really difficult because there are a lot of things that kind of incentivize us to ignore our needs and desires. And so for me, I struggled a lot with self-love when I was younger. I mean, it's a lifelong practice for everybody, but I really struggled with it. And I remember just thinking, I really want to get good at this, and I have no idea how, and I don't know anybody who can teach me because all my role models are terrible at this. So
they're all go-getters and people who are strivers. Who were your role models growing up?
I would say, like, the people around me were, it's not necessarily that they were all go-getters, it's that they were good at, and I think maybe sometimes this can be both a cultural thing, it can be a gender thing, but the women in my life who were role models for me were really good at self-sacrificing, right? Mm. Being kind of martyrs. And I think that can have its gifts because when it comes from a loving and compassionate place, but also you can deprioritize yourself in a way that's not honoring you. And that's what I witnessed, and that's what conditioned me. And so that's what I was used to doing is, you know, kind of being a people pleaser, basically. Mm. And when you've been conditioned in that way for so long, you kind of have to reprogram yourself. And it takes a lot of intention and dedication, I think. So for me, it was a practice of years and years and years where I really was trying to learn, first of all, how to even begin to tune into myself, how to even begin to know what I wanted and who I was. And then once I figured it out, learning to trust whatever that was telling me, and then having the courage to go for it, right? To act on that. It's a whole process, and I'm still always practicing it, but I think you do get better at it. And I think when you set the intention to get better at something and you're diligent about it, I personally think that you can always get there. Like, people say prayers for a lot of things, have intentions, or try to manifest a lot of things. I think sometimes it works or it doesn't with the external. Mm. But when you have a strong intention for your own internal transformation, I personally have found that I always eventually get there in the end.
What does having a strong internal intention for your life look like?
I think it looks like deciding who you want to be and where you want to get to and who you need to be to get there. Mm. And then deciding that you're going to learn how. And sometimes, often, there's not a blueprint, but having the intention is enough, because I personally believe that when you have that intention, the blueprint reveals itself. The right resources, the right books, the right podcast episode will kind of just surface in your life. And all of those will be pieces of the puzzle.
Hmm. It's funny because so much of our life and how I was raised, at least, was with an external, everything's external. Yeah. What's rewarded is external. And it's much rarer for somebody to say, oh, you're so peaceful internally, therefore you're successful. Mm. Or you really love yourself, mm-hmm. so I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
That's a rare statement for someone to make, at least when I was growing up and where I grew up in New York.
Yeah.
And so what do you think we can do to change the culture or change even the micro day to day to get people to reward inner wholeness more?
I think on an individual level, the more we each personally do that and embody that, I think it can be contagious. Mm. I think everything is contagious, good things and bad things. And so I think if we want to see that shift in culture and in society, we need to exemplify that, which is very hard because there are still many ways in which I measure myself by external things. And also, I think collectively, I actually feel kind of hopeful because I think people are having more conversations about burnout and about your self-worth and what it is really tied to, right? Whether, you know, just being successful and having a lot of money is where your value lies. Or for women, I think about this a lot, your appearance, right? What you weigh on the scale, that kind of thing. I think we're having more conversations about it. And I think that's the first step. So that makes me feel like we're maybe headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
But sometimes we only transform when things get really painful.
Mm. So you've spent so much time with women founders. And I think that's actually one of the weak points of this podcast is it's a lot of male dominated focus. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you think I might get wrong or what I might not know about women founders in general and their perspective on the world, because you spent a lot of time building MakeLane.
Yeah.
And it's 1,700 women are in that, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. And so you've spent thousands of hours talking to women, talking to founders who are women. And I'm curious, what is something that most people might not know about women founders in general?
Interesting. I don't know that there are things that people don't know. And I also think there's a risk of treating them as a monolith, and they're not, right? It's a whole, you know, it's half the population. But that being said, I am going to make some generalizations and I stand by them. I think women tend to be more concerned about their impact on others in many ways. I think they tend to be more altruistic in some ways. Not all the time, but but they're complex like anybody. But I do think that, you know, part of the reason I started MakeLane is because I was seeing a lot of communities for e-commerce founders that were more about making money. Mm. And when I would meet women who were in my space who had their own brands and wanted to grow their own brands, they were more about being cause-driven, mission-driven, right? Sustainability, inclusivity, representation. And I thought, that's really interesting. That's more sort of culturally my vibe as far as values. So I'm going to create a community for women. And it wasn't about just making it kind of like a women's only club. It was about trying to take the most straightforward approach to having more mission-driven founders in one space. So I think that's something. And then I actually have a lot of interesting conversations with VCs about how women, when they are pitching, and this won't be necessarily news because I think it's also reflected in the way women negotiate their salaries or apply to jobs, but I think women kind of downplay their abilities, they underestimate themselves, especially relative to men, when they're pitching investors, the sort of big vision that they're pitching often is a lot more sort of realistic, but that's not what gets you funded, right? Mm. So you have to be kind of delusional in a way. You have to put your Elon Musk hat on. And I think women don't naturally find that comfortable, whether or not it's, you know, whether it's nature or nurture. I think that's another discussion and it's complicated, but I think that is sort of the general pattern.
How do women these days balance the idea of having a child in their in prime career age? Like, let's say, like, I don't know, 25 to 35 could be like when someone's crushing it in their career, but also biologically wanting to have a child. How do women, the women that you've spoke to, think about that?
I don't know. And I don't know that people feel like they're super successful at it, you know, because a lot of people I talk to about this idea of balance, especially moms, working moms, they don't like the word balance because it has this implication of you're trying to perfectly balance things, but it's never going to feel like you're getting it exactly right. So that's what I've heard. As somebody who does not have children, I can't really speak firsthand to this. But I also think it's an interesting thing because it's one of the few things that I've gotten backlash on TikTok about, because I've made a few videos saying, oh, this founder has had an incredible run, has built something amazing. Now she's going to have a child. So it's great that she's going to have more time as she steps down from being CEO. For example, I said something like that, or I said something like, oh, this founder's juggling a lot because she's just had a kid. And I think people misinterpreted that to mean you can't be a mom and be a successful founder or CEO at the same time, which is not at all what I mean. But I got a lot of hate for it and even had people making videos about it and saying I was sexist because it's the internet. And I think it's an interesting thing because I have a lot of conversations with my female friends about this kind of thing, right? Oh, how are you planning this? How are you thinking about this? And when we look at some of the research behind it, there are differences in even how much women get paid after, you know, they've been out of the workforce as a mom or whatever. But then when we try to have conversations about it, I think it can be a very touchy subject because people see it as, well, are you saying that women can't be a founder and a mom at the same time? And it's like, no, that's not what we're saying. We're just pointing out how it's not easy, right? We all agree that it's not easy. So anyway, I think I don't know that anybody has the answers. And I think having a lot of help helps. But in this country, we don't have a lot of good help around that in terms of policy. And I think even having the right help is a matter of privilege, right? So it's hard. Yeah. Is the conclusion.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And on that topic, it was interesting because it seemed like you were qualifying some statements because you could feel backlash coming at certain points. And that's something I think we were talking about just before we started recording. It's like, how has posting so much content on the internet changed the way you talk and how you think in general?
I think it has made me more aware of how I might be misinterpreted in ways that are perceived as offensive or hurtful. And in some ways, I really don't like it because I think there are people out there who are just hurt and angry and they're looking for reasons, right? They're looking for an excuse to be mad.
Yeah.
And I don't like noticing myself catering to those voices because they're such a small minority and most people are reasonable. But I also, one thing I do appreciate about this is people have brought up perspectives. Other people, more reasonable people, have brought up perspectives that are valid that I haven't considered. So now I have all of those voices in my head, and some of them I think are valid and valuable. And I thank people for sharing a perspective with me that I might not have thought of. And then for the rest of the angry voices, I don't necessarily want to be catering to them. But it's hard because you don't want, especially on TikTok, things can just go viral in an instant. There's always that risk that you might say something a little bit wrong and then it goes viral and then people just come at you for it. And that actually doesn't, I don't mind being disliked by people who are willfully misunderstanding me. But what I don't want to do is for the people who are my true followers, I don't want to ever hurt them by accident, you know? So it's hard to juggle those.
And then it also becomes like self-love, in that if you hurt the people who support you, but it's true to yourself, then there has to be a place for that as well.
That's true. Yeah. I think it's just really hard to, it's just hard to be candid online these days. You know, I often find myself thinking there are strong opinions I have about some of these things that I'm holding back, and it's starting to feel like I'm repressing myself and my opinions because I am afraid of offending people. But for me, it's never coming from a bad or malicious place. You know, I'm not just trying to be obnoxious. I'm not trying to, you know, those people who just are being clickbaity and awful for the sake of it. That's not me, but I still shy away from it. So it's hard.
What I appreciate about following you so much is how much you're willing to look at another perspective. Mm-hmm. I remember at one point you were asking for conservative podcast recommendations. And I just thought that was very telling to your personality and what you're about. And then another part I remember, you were hanging out with somebody with a gun and you were, yeah. So it was just like, I don't know. It was cool to see the ways in which you go out of your own filter bubble on purpose. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. And I think the world needs more of that. How do we start to have more love and appreciation for the other side, and help bridge the gap between our own ideologue bubble and the rest of the world?
Yeah, I think that's so pertinent and even increasingly urgent now. And I also see you as somebody who exemplifies that, so I appreciate you seeing that. But yeah, I try to operate from, okay, I care about understanding things. I care about the truth, right? It's this sort of ideal pursuit for me. I always want to be kind of chipping away at my own ignorance and trying to uncover the truth about various things. And that's a very abstract concept, but what it means for me is I try to operate from the premise that I could be wrong, that there's something I'm missing, right? Because I can't possibly know everything. I have not lived every life. I am only just me. I have my perspectives and my own biases. And I think most people, especially today, operate from the premise that they are right and everybody else is wrong and everybody else needs to understand their perspective. Mm. But I want to operate from the premise, even just from a principled perspective, so we can have more of this kind of energy, I want to operate from the premise that maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'm wrong. What am I missing? What is it like to be you, and why do you believe what you believe? And if I'm saying that, then I have to at least understand what, you know, the other half of the country understands. I mean, I identify as more left-leaning, but I think I have all kinds of beliefs, but if I had to categorize myself, that's probably where I am. But I can't just write off half the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I also think that we have this thing where when we see people as other, we dehumanize them.
Yes.
And we think they don't deserve to be listened to. Yes. But the other thing that I often think about is if I were exposed to the exact same environment and stimuli and people and ideas as them.
And you had the same genes?
Had the same genes, right? Internal, external, nature, nurture. If I were exposed to all those same variables, I might very well be saying the exact same thing, putting on, you know, a MAGA hat and protesting in the streets, right? Who knows? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but those are not my personal beliefs. But like, I can't write off the fact that everybody is shaped differently. Hmm. And if I see myself as somebody who cares about being compassionate and promoting dialogue and discourse, which I like to think of myself as that, then I have to branch out. So
when did the pursuit of the truth start for you?
This is such a big question. I don't think I've ever been asked it. I think it's just always been a part of me. I think I've always been very curious. I think that's probably my most defining trait. And I can't really remember ever not being curious. I think when you're younger, it's more limited and narrow, right? But I think that I've always wanted to understand, above all, how to be a more skillful human.
A more skillful human.
Yeah. I think like there's an art of being a human.
I love that.
And I want to understand it. I want to develop it as a craft, and it's important to me, and it's also fascinating to me. So I think that has been probably something I've cared about specifically since I was maybe 14 or 15.
What is a skillful human to you?
It's funny because I am saying I care about this, but I've never asked myself that. It's been more of an implicit, inarticulated thing. I think a skillful human is somebody who is in mastery of themselves and operates harmoniously and is able to act in integrity. And I don't just mean that ethically or morally. I mean, I think a lot of people say they want things and don't actually do things that support that, right? Mm. Everybody has inner conflict. We say we want to have a podcast.
I was literally just thinking that.
We say we want to do that, or we say we care about a certain project. We say we want to start a business. We say we want to be healthier, right? We have all sorts of desires and aims, but we are often the one standing in our own ways. And I think that's true of everyone in different areas of their life. I've yet to meet a person who doesn't stand in their own way in at least one area of their own life, right? And I think that's fascinating. It's so interesting. So what does it take to actually overcome that, to have that integrity in the sense that you are one, you are whole, you are not fighting yourself in any way? So that to me is sort of like an ongoing pursuit.
Yeah. And I love the idea that in one part of your life, you could have 100 days of discipline for working out. You could have 100 days of discipline for posting videos on TikTok or YouTube. But another part, you could be struggling to create a podcast and post it consistently. Yeah. So let's go into that.
Okay, let's do a coaching session.
Yeah. Why do you think you've posted one podcast episode, which was phenomenal? Everyone should go check it out immediately. Link down below.
The one episode.
Why? And I told you when I listened to that, I was like, wow, this is a topic that I didn't care about and you made me care about it. Yeah. And that's exciting. That's cool. And I was like, when's the next one? I'm sure many messages coming in. When's the next one? So what's going on there? Why are we only on episode one, Doma?
Yeah. Oh gosh, Danny. So I have my excuses and then I have the real reason. I'll tell you what the excuses are because this is my canned response, and then we'll go into the real reason. The excuses are, oh, I'm a perfectionist. Oh, I want it to be right. Oh, there's a lot of research that goes into it. Oh, I have some stuff going on with family, whatever. Excuses, excuses. But we both know if you care about it, you make time for it, you get it done, right? The real reason, I think, because I've done some psychoanalyzing of myself around this, I think that it's something that's so important to me, and it's the thing that I want to be the thing in my life, that I'm so afraid of actually going for it. Because TikTok was accidental. I never saw myself as, you know, I want to be an influencer, I want to be a creator. So if it works out, amazing, what a gift. If it doesn't, it's like, all right, well, that wasn't supposed to be the end goal anyway. And same with everything else. But the podcast is the thing that I can see myself doing indefinitely. And I think you already know that I love podcasts. I really respect the craft. I think you're a great interviewer. I love listening to your podcast. I just appreciate just the possibilities of the format. And because of that, I revere it so much that if my attempt at it fails, I will not know what to do with myself. I'll be like, what do I do from here? I have no idea what to do with myself. And I think I'm so afraid of that, that I'm just kind of standing back and I'm delaying. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's so, I think like when it is the thing that you want more than anything, it can be so afraid to actually try it, because if it doesn't work out, or if somehow, yeah, if it somehow doesn't work out, then what do you do?
Yeah, but it's also not working out when you're not doing it.
Yes, but it's not working out on my terms.
Yes, exactly. It's like, okay, if you continue doing what you've been doing,
yeah,
well, then it won't work out. Like posting one episode every, let's say, like 3 months, right? Like then it literally won't work out. Yeah. But you could at least say, you know what, like maybe in my head it was better.
Right.
If you don't walk up to the girl at the bar, you could convince yourself, oh, it wasn't meant to be anyway. So
I think it's so similar to that. I was just thinking in relationships, sometimes you can have like a sabotaging pattern, right? Or you can withhold, or you can be afraid to open up, or whatever. And I think that that is something similar. That's what that makes me think of, because it's a way of kind of avoiding something not working out or the pain of that, but doing it on your terms, because it somehow weirdly feels a little more palatable when you are in control of it not working out, which is a funny, again, going back to that whole integrity thing, right? Like you say you want something, but you're actually, you're your own worst enemy, or you're getting in your own way.
So what do you do about it?
What do you do about it? I read this quote once, I'm going to paraphrase, about this person who is a writer, very prolific author, and she gives a lot of people advice about writing books. And she said something like, apparently every time before she starts writing a book, she has this fear of, oh my gosh, what if it flops, right? Even seasoned authors have that, even seasoned, you know, artists, creatives, whatever. And she was saying, I've learned a trick where I tell myself I'm going to write a short, bad book. That's what she tells herself. It's going to be short. It's going to be bad. She's going to get it done. It's going to get out there. And at least she will have done it and gotten it out of her system. And I think that's the mindset I probably need, where I'm like, it can't be bad. It has to be long. It has to be in-depth. It has to rock people's worlds. It has to be the most in-depth, comprehensive piece of investigative journalism on this company that anybody has ever seen. And then that makes it so that it never gets done. So I think what I need to become comfortable with, and you know what's interesting is, if I had gone from no audience to a podcast, I probably would have had more frequency. But because I have this TikTok following and they're like, where's the podcast? Where's the podcast? I feel so kind of trapped in my own perfectionism around, I want to give them something so good. I want to make it worth their wait. And then the longer I wait, I'm like, now it has to be really worth their wait.
It's a never ending cycle.
Yeah. So I almost feel like, not to blame my following, but I almost feel like it would have been easier to start with nothing and thinking nobody's going to listen to it, because you have that grace period to kind of fumble around, you know? And I have fortunately bypassed that, but that's the other end of that coin.
Well, it's interesting. People think about only the good things when they're thinking about building a following or having a lot of money,
yeah,
or being in an amazing relationship, but they don't think about the bad things that could come with that, all those positives.
Yeah.
And I think it's important having that conversation about the potential downsides to having a large audience of people who care about you and respect you. It's like, well, now there's more weight on your words, yeah, and more pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
And so how have you gone about navigating through that?
Well, clearly not well.
Well, in some aspects.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I actually think that when it comes to building an audience, and I'm still early, right? I'm still a year into this journey. I don't have millions of followers, but I have a small, very devoted fan base, or community is the more accurate way to think about it. And I think the gift of that is, in the beginning, when you're creating content, you're posting to crickets, you're being a little cringe, you're testing out different things, right? And there's no feedback loop of people saying, I love this, keep going. Mm. But once you hit that critical mass of people who love your content, even if it's a small sort of group of people who are just ardent followers, that creates a virtuous cycle where you're like, now I have to show up for them. You know, now it's no longer about just me trying to build a following. It's about them and me serving them. At least that's how I have thought about it. So that's the good part. But then the other part is, yeah, it is hard, because you can't always give your followers everything that they want. When you branch out into different formats, it can be a little bit crippling because you're not used to it, but you want to maintain the same quality that you have become known for on your native, you know, platform. So I think those are the ways in which it can be hard. But I think there are a lot of ways that being a creator And this is a privileged thing to say. Again, I'm qualifying myself.
Let it be, Dolma. Just say what you feel.
There are a lot of ways. There are a lot of weird things about being a creator that people don't think about. They think it's just, you know, it's just fun and games and you have the best job in the world. And in so many ways, I do feel like I have the best job in the world. But there are things that come with it that are like, wow, I hadn't considered that. Or, you know, people, one example is, and you handle it so gracefully, and I don't feel like I do. But when there's something weird that happens when you are a kind of a public persona or when you put yourself out there online, where people who are just like feeling negativity feel like they have a right to just kind of take it out on you, just like dump that negativity in your comments or say something mean or kind of just try to bring you down with them because they just see you as fair game in a way. You might have just kind of come across their path in their feed. They're not having a good day. They're going to make it known to you and it's going to get personal. And I think I struggle with that, not necessarily because I kind of take those comments personally, but I just don't, it just makes me so sad that we live in a society like that. So when I see that happen, I'm just like, why does it have to be like this? Like, this person is hurting, but also I feel compassion for the fact that you're hurting, but also go find a therapist, you know, stop taking it out on me. Go get some therapy, take a walk, meditate, touch some grass. So, yeah.
I understand where you're coming from with that. And it's hard because this is a new phenomenon, commenting on posts and the engagement of everyone having a voice is a huge positive, but also a negative as well.
So new and so unnatural, right? Yeah. Like, when has that ever been a thing to have this instantaneous feedback from thousands of strangers at your fingertips saying nice things, horrible things? And it can go both ways. Like, the other thing I'm very wary of is I don't ever want to drink my own Kool-Aid and be like, I'm so great, you know? But it can be hard because people are like, you're so great, you're so great. And I'm so like, I am pretty great.
How do you not stop believing that? Well, we talked about some of the negative sides of being a creator, but what are some of the most positive aspects that have happened to you in the past year?
Yeah. I mean, the list is so long and I think about it often, but just to name a few, I have gotten to meet some incredible people. I mean, on Monday, I'm organizing this dinner of people that I used to look up to, I used to follow, I used to be inspired by, I would listen to their interviews, right? I just admired them so much. And now I can just text them and be like, hey, let's grab dinner. And they're like, yes, let's do it within short notice, you know? And they're just excited to see me. And it's just so surreal. And it's not about that per se. It's just, I strongly believe that when you find your path and when you're committed to yourself and when you're committed to honoring what your desires are and expressing your gifts, I strongly feel that all the other things, like, you know, money or recognition or accolades, those fall into place. Those are a secondary byproduct of you honoring yourself. I really feel that to be true. And insofar as these external things are sort of signals that I'm on that right path, that's why they matter to me. I feel like, wow, I wasn't delusional. I was right all along. It was good that I stuck it out. You know, I was kind of wandering in the desert for a few years, but I just had this inkling that this is how it could be. And so I really fought for it and had my own sort of stuff to overcome. But now when I, you know, meet people like this or get invited to speak at conferences that I appreciate or have just incredible people reaching out to me and I get to work on interesting projects with people that I admire, all of that is just kind of, for me, confirmation that I'm on the right path and that it can be like that.
Here's a quote from you. The different areas of our life that are external, money, relationships, career, family, those are simply a reflection of what is inside us.
Wow.
You said that in December of 2020 in a YouTube video.
That's so crazy. Yeah, I really do believe that.
And so on that topic, it's like, what do you do if what's inside you, you're not happy with in that moment?
I think it starts from a step that sounds very simple, but it's actually very difficult and very few people sit down to do it, which is asking yourself what you really want, not what you think is realistic, not what the next most likely step could be, not what you feel like you have permission to have, but what you really, really want. Set aside all the noise, all the limiting beliefs, all the conditioning, all the what will people think, and just ask yourself, ideally, what do I want in this area of my life? Mm. And I think that is something that so few people do. And I wasn't doing for such a long time. I think it's easy to react to different parts of our lives and say, oh, I don't like that. I don't want that. But actually, what do you want? Then what do you want? Mm. What would your ideal look like? You know? And I think it starts there. And then once you have an idea of that, it goes back to the intention thing. Okay, set the intention that that's where you eventually want to get to. It's okay to not know how. It's okay to not know how and to just tell yourself, just commit to yourself, that's where I eventually want to get. And I personally have a spiritual practice and I pray and I ask for things. And so I will say, you know, I don't know how to get here, but show me the way. Mm. Show me the way. Provide me with the resources. I'm willing. And I also think that this can be more powerful and accelerated. This is my personal belief. This path, this process can be more accelerated if we are doing it in the service of something bigger than ourselves, not just for our own ego, not just so we can have a lot of money, right? I want a Maserati, please show me the way. Not like that. That wouldn't work. Or maybe it will. I don't know, but I haven't tried it. But I think when you are standing for something bigger and when your heart is in the right place, when you're coming from the right place, then I think that we are given the tools to express our gifts. I really believe that.
What is the thing bigger than yourself that you are hoping to serve?
There are a few things. There are different themes that are kind of interlocking. I would say I care a lot about women and equality. I care about that deeply because I, you know, was raised by a single immigrant mom here. We were poor. I saw her go through a lot of bullshit to, you know, put food on the table. And that shaped me a lot. So that's one. I feel for women and I want them to do well. And I want them to have a voice and have confidence and have all the means that they need to live the lives that they want. The other thing that maybe is more deeper and universal is I mean, it kind of goes back to a lot of the things we're talking about. My intention for my life is to be, the way I think about it is fully utilized. I just want to be utilized. That's what I want. And if it takes me here and it takes me there, that's fine. If it takes me to fancy dinners or conferences, I don't really care about that. I just want to be fully utilized. And I think I'm good at articulating things. I think I'm good at, you know, creating content. I think I'm insightful about business. So that happens to me, my way of doing that. But whatever it is for anybody else, I want them to have the same thing. Mm. Because I think that when, okay, we can go there. This is going to sound kind of out there, but,
go there.
But I think when I see humanity as a large organism and I see humanity as a large organism and every person is like a cell in that organism and every cell has its function. And when we find and fulfill that function, the whole organism can thrive. That's how I think of it. And I think that for various reasons, we forget our function or we try mm-hmm. to go beyond it. And when a cell is malfunctioning and trying to do things it shouldn't do, that's a cancerous cell, right? It's harmful to everything around it. And so I actually see part of my role as, okay, what is my function? How can I serve the whole? And then how can I be the facilitator that helps other people do the same thing? How can I unlock that? How can I be a cheerleader? How can I provide resources? And in my own narrow way, I think business can be a vehicle for service, not all the time, obviously, but I think sort of it's at its highest potential, it can be. And that's why I talk about business. It's not that I want everybody to go out there and start a beauty brand. It's that I want people to, in fact, they probably shouldn't do that. But what I want is for people who have some sort of idea to feel armed with the resources and confidence to be able to do it. That's why I talk about these case studies. And I say, look, she did it. You can too, right? And here's how you do it. Do this strategy, use this tool, use the software, whatever. And so I see my sort of function as how can I help other people find theirs and unlock theirs? Mm. Because I think that that is the thing that is in the highest service to the greater good, to the whole, to the collective. And also it happens to be very elegantly the thing that makes us happiest, right? It feels really good to be doing your thing, to be in your zone, to be in the flow of what your gifts are. So I see that as being a really lovely coincidence of the universe.
It's beautiful. And you said here I love being a messenger in my heart of hearts. That's what I really am. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so powerful. And you really are a messenger for all these, the business, you're a messenger for how to be somebody who shows up in the world with discipline and love. Mm-hmm. And for that, I'm really grateful to experience it all and witness it go down. Mm-hmm. But what would you say to somebody who is, hears you, they're like, I have a gift, but I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And I've been there, and I'm sure you've been there as well. You feel like you have something, but you don't know how to share it and you don't know how to express it in the world. Where do you start?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I could just write a whole thesis on that. I have a PhD in being stuck. I know everything about it. I would say it starts with a few principles. It starts with honesty. You have to be honest with yourself, because very often I actually find that when people say, I don't know what I want, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, very often they know, they're just afraid to admit it because they're afraid of the consequences.
I got to interrupt you with another quote from you in May of 2019.
I love this.
With a lot of important decisions, I already know the answer, but I'm too scared to admit it or pursue it. Mm-hmm. So I ask for advice to validate this decision I'm already leaning towards. So I think it's important to be honest with ourselves. Do you really not know the answer, or are you just scared of your truth? May of 2019, and now we're in September of 2022, and you're saying the same exact thing. I love it. It's consistency.
Yeah. No, I have really found this to be true both in myself and now when I observe other people, right? So I do think that we often know more than we give ourselves credit for. So first of all, be honest with yourself. What do you really want? People are afraid of admitting the truth because there are costs to acting on it, or they perceive there to be costs that outweigh the benefits. But just being honest with yourself doesn't have a cost, right? You owe it to yourself to be honest with yourself. So first of all, be honest with yourself about what it is. What do you know? Okay, you might not know exactly what it is. Very often, I think our purpose, if we want to call it that, can shift in terms of its external kind of shape and form and contours. But the themes might be continuous, right? There might be consistency there. So what do you know? And let's start there. And then once you have an inkling, I think people want the fully formed idea to fall from the heavens and be this perfectly monetized career path. It's not going to happen like that. You're going to have to struggle. You're going to have to, like, you know, fall and stumble and try things out and kind of grope blindly through this maze where you're trying to figure out, you know, where you're like ikigai or whatever. You're trying to figure out where the intersection of what you love and what the world needs and what you can pay your bills with, all of that is. By the way, I will say, not every passion needs to be something that pays your bills, right? Those can be separate. You can have a regular job. There's honor and beauty in that. And you can have something outside of it that makes your heart sing. So I would say start with honesty. Know that you're not going to have this fully formed thing kind of, you know, blueprint fall into your lap. You're going to have to figure it out, take action. And then that thing will reveal itself to you step by step. And I also think it just requires a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. It requires a lot of courage because there are so many risks and perceived risks to being true to ourselves. And I think sometimes there's just a lot of therapy or inner work or family stuff that even needs to be worked through, right? Because I think we can have a lot of fears that seemingly have nothing to do with that particular thing. Like, let's say you want to be a creative or an actor or an artist, right? But you were conditioned by your family to pursue a different path. So for you, being honest with yourself has tremendous risk. Mm-hmm. Not only are you potentially, you know, going to take on that financial risk and all the sort of practical aspects of that, but also you might alienate your family. What are they going to think? Maybe they made sacrifices for you. Me as an immigrant, I have had to contend with so much of this where I'm like, my mom crossed an ocean to come here, go through all that bullshit so I could leave Google. Like, who do I think I am? That took me years to get over. It was so, so hard. Wow. And even now, you know, it's something I struggle with. So I think it just requires a lot of courage and ultimately realizing that what is best for you, like the deepest part of you, like the highest expression of you is good for everybody around you, because you thriving and shining your light is not bad for society. It's a good thing.
Mm. And when you quit Google, you use this statement to help you navigate your change. You said, I don't want to be running away from something. Mm-hmm. I want to be running towards something. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such a powerful way to frame it. It's like, in your mind right now with whatever you're doing, are you playing defense like you with the podcast, or are you playing offense? not to harp on it,
this
but just
the ulterior motive. Come to Jesus moment.
But like, But it's like defense versus offense, yeah. and thinking about it like that, and really sitting with yourself and being like, is what I'm doing the highest expression of myself? Am I going towards something that I can't wait to grasp, or am I running away from something, yeah. which you were at Google?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, that was a confusing time because I was so resistant to being in that particular role in that particular context and environment because it wasn't necessarily a fit for me, but I didn't have enough self-knowledge or self-awareness to know why and what would be a better fit. Mm. So all I knew is I need to leave this situation, but then what am I leaving it for? Mm. And I didn't quite know. I had an idea and I kind of ended up, you know, sort of feeling my way towards it and kind of iterating over the next few years, but it took me a while. So I think that's also important to note is people want things instantaneously, yeah. but this is the journey of a lifetime. You learning more about yourself and who you are and what you want to do in the world and what your role is, that is the practice of a lifetime. I personally think it's one of the practices of our lives, right? And so it's not going to be instantaneous. And sometimes I also want to say that timing matters. Like, I don't think that I could have been good at what I'm doing now years ago. Like, there's a reason I had to go through all those steps, have all those years of weird feeling lost and stuck and confused, trying different things, right? Starting different businesses. All of that actually led up to this. And there's that Steve Jobs quote about how the dots connect looking back. Like, every single dot has truly connected for me in the most elegant way. And I think that that's just only going to continue. So there is a timing element that needs to be honored.
Yeah. And on that point, it's interesting to think about what you're doing right now, mm-hmm. are also things you're going to look back on and be like, wow, that was crazy. I was laying the groundwork for that moment and that moment. Totally. And you have this great quote that's going to stick with me for a long time, which is about romanticizing the present moment. Mm. What does that mean to you?
I think I remember saying this, and I remember my friend who interviewed me asked me what I meant, and I also had to pause. And I have to pause again. But what it means to me is, maybe it's because I recently turned 30, but I just have this feeling of life is short. Life is short. It's such a gift. It's such a gift to be alive and to get to do all the things that we get to do. And who knows if we're going to have another chance. Maybe you believe in reincarnation. Maybe this is it, right? Who knows? And in the absence of certainty, it's incumbent upon us to make the most of this particular lifetime. And I think that's not just about doing, it's about being, it's about appreciating, it's about just remembering to be happy, because there's always going to be a next thing. There's always going to be a next milestone. There's always going to be, oh, when I have that thing, when I hit this many downloads, when I have this successful podcast, when I have 100,000 followers, 1 million followers, when I make this much money, right? When I have a family, when I have kids, all these different milestones, there are always going to be milestones. It's always a moving target. That thing that we tell ourselves needs to happen before we can just sit down, relax, and be happy and just take it all in. It's a moving target. There's always going to be something new there, right? It's just part of our nature. And I think it's important to actively combat that and be like, no, this is it. I can't just chase after the next thing and miss my life. Because life is made up of ordinary moments. I really love the book that most shaped me is called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Have you read it?
The book that most shaped me is A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle.
Okay, yeah, very similar. Yeah. So what I loved about that, I don't remember which book it was in, I don't remember his exact phrase, but it was something like, life is just made up of ordinary moments, right? And yet we're always waiting for those few moments that are really big moments. Yeah. But everything else is ordinary when you think about it, right? Me taking an Uber to come here, just, you know, after we have this conversation, we're gonna, you know, do whatever, move on with our day. Like, all those little ordinary moments, they're precious when you think about them, because that's what life is. And when we miss them, we miss our life. And that's sad, you know? And so that's what I think about is, right now I feel like my career is really just starting. I feel like in some ways my life, like the life I really dreamed of is starting in so many ways. And this is such a beautiful time in my life. There's a temptation to be like, okay, next thing, next thing, next thing, next project, next, you know, meeting, next dinner, whatever. But I'm going to look back on this time and it's going to be the most precious set of memories. Me moving to New York, having this weird accidental TikTok career take off. Who'd have thought? Talking about the Kardashians. What in the world? Right? Like, all of this stuff is awesome and weird and beautiful. And I'm going to look back on it. And on my deathbed, I'm going to think about these moments. So why not just soak them in now?
What do you think is going on at a deeper level about just this experience?
Which experience?
This experience of life. Like, why are we here? What's going on? You just strike me as a very deep thinker and somebody who spent time thinking about stuff like this. And for everyone who expected a women's lesson, women's founders on business school, I'm sorry for bringing you in this deep, but I know this is something like that is very much within your being.
Yeah.
Of like thinking of like, what is going on here? Right. We're on this floating rock in space.
Is it a simulation?
What do you think? What's going on?
Yeah. So what I've concluded so far is
It's okay not to know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a pretty big question.
Yeah.
But so there's this really beautiful, again, it goes back to Eckhart, and there's this quote by, I want to say Thoreau said this, something about, I love flowers. In fact, my first business was a fragrance business because I love flowers and I wanted them in bottled up form to put on my skin. But I love flowers, and every time I delight in them, I think about this quote that goes, the earth laughs in flowers. That's why they exist. It's a poetic kind of rendering of, you know, why flowers are a thing. Obviously, there's a biological explanation, but I love this poetic idea of the earth just wants to laugh, and it does it for no reason in these beautiful, random, fragrant forms, right? Like, what is, when you look at a flower, it's like, you're so beautiful for what? That's so unnecessary. It's so random. Why? And sometimes I can't help but think, maybe we are like that. Maybe we're flowers. Maybe the universe is kind of just doing its little dance through us, you know? We're just little like blips, and we're part of this greater whole, and we're just here to experience and to like be conscious. So I don't really know. but I think that not knowing makes me want to make the most of it, because I don't know. So why not just try to make the most of it? Be the best person I can. Be self-actualized and fully utilized the best that I can.
Be a skillful person.
Be skillful at this, whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, it's cool to just experience this whole thing. Like that's how I feel sometimes. Yeah. And on your topic of like what to do when you don't know, is like, what are the moments you feel most at one with whatever you're doing? And how can you make those moments more in terms of, like, for you, doing, all right, you loved business. And then how can I explain this to people who don't know it? Well, maybe you felt at one or at peace in that moment with life. And so what are other moments where you feel most one with life?
I feel that I'm a writer. I'm a writer doing other things for now. That's how I see myself. Because the first thing and the biggest thing that makes me feel like time stops and there's nowhere else I need to be is writing. Wow. And it's not any specific kind of writing, just when I'm kind of articulating my thoughts about something or someone in an essay, or even sort of like an elaborate journal entry or writing a poem or whatever. That's where I feel like time stops for me. So anything to do with words, really. Words and language and expression and being a messenger, I think all of that is kind of what this form is here for in different ways. And then I have my things that I care about that I'm an evangelist or a warrior for. So I apply these skills and gifts to those objectives. But ultimately, when I am expressing through words, I am the happiest. I feel like I am a fish in the ocean, just in my little element.
What about writing do you enjoy the most?
Why do I enjoy the most? I just enjoy it. I just love like finding the right word for something. I love being this, I like being surprised by what comes out. That happens for me a lot when I'm writing, is I kind of just open myself up. I start writing and then I'm like, wow, that's a great way to put it. You know, I almost feel like I'm reading somebody else's writing. And very often I have the experience of going back to things that I wrote and being like, wow, that writing is smarter than I am. That's how I feel a little bit. And I think that is just so satisfying, so deeply satisfying to me, just finding the right word for things, expressing things, learning even what I believe and how I feel through the process of writing, having that writing kind of be a vulnerable sort of capturing of my feelings about something that maybe if I share it with people can feel kind of universal. All of that I just find the most satisfying experience.
If you're forced to write a book tomorrow, what would it be on?
How to start a podcast.
I don't know if you're qualified to write that one.
Probably not. Not yet. It would be about learning to listen to yourself and find your gifts. Because I have grappled with this for so many years. I have spent so much time agonizing over this. And also, I think I'm somebody who, when I'm going through something, whether it's difficult or easy or wonderful or hard, I am constantly on a very meta level analyzing it. And I can't turn it off. It's just how I am. And so I think that if it can help one other person who's feeling really stuck, like they have a bigger thing to share or do, or, you know, they feel like they're somewhere. For so long, I felt like there was some place I needed to be, almost like I had this appointment and I was late for it and I didn't know what it was. I couldn't remember, couldn't figure out what it was or where it was supposed to be. That's how I felt. And it was so painful. It was so difficult for some reason. And if somebody else is feeling that way, I feel like I've gone through so many different versions of this process in so many different ways that I feel like I can offer things that helped me, ways of thinking it, frameworks, tips, lessons. And hopefully that will be valuable to people. But that's what I, if there's any book in me, that's probably it.
I can't wait to read that. How do you want people to remember you?
I've never thought about this. I think I would, I don't really think about this a lot. I don't know. I think I would like to be thought of in different ways by different groups of people. So one group is the people who know me and love me. I want them to remember me as being a source of constant warmth and support for them. Like I was just always in their corner. This is making me emotional because I'm thinking about specific people. I want them to just feel like, wow, that person just always believed in me, always saw my gifts. Because this is the conversation I love to have with people. Even if I meet a stranger at a bar, I'll be like, what do you really want to do? And they're like, okay, take it easy. I just asked you if you wanted a drink, you know? So I want people to feel like I always really believed in them and saw their gifts and was rooting for them, because not everybody has that, but I think it can make such a difference. So that's how I feel in terms of how I want the people who know me to remember me. And then for everybody else, I don't really care as long as they don't think I was a horrible person, but even then I don't really care. I don't really care what people think about me beyond the people who really know me, you know, because people are always going to see through their own filters. I think it's true that people see you not as you are, but as they are, but hopefully, you know, I make some attempts at being useful through my content and being good to people. So hopefully they see that, but if they don't, then what can you do?
That was a beautiful answer. I never thought about breaking up into two sections. Before we come to a close, I'd love to ask about a challenge to leave the audience or someone listening with. Mm-hmm. I find that what we leave people with in terms of challenges, in terms of striving for more, is often deeply connected to what we really value. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious for you, what is something you would like to challenge somebody listening to do?
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be for 100 straight days. It could be 30.
No, it will be for 100 straight days. No, I'm kidding. Well, actually, I'm not, because I have a very specific prescription around this. I was reflecting today on what really led me to this whole TikTok journey. And it actually started with a very specific exercise. This was right before New Year's 2021. So New Year's Eve-ish 2020, I did this exercise where I asked myself, basically I sat down and journaled about what would a perfect typical day look like for me. Not just like a crazy day where something wild happened, you know, me getting some sort of award or something, not like that. Just a typical day, a typical Tuesday in my life. Ideally, what would it look like from start to finish? And I really just journaled it out and I visualized it. And a lot of the images that came up were actually surprising. They were unexpected. And that's what helped me figure out, oh, I want to create content. Because I was having this image come up of me going live to just a group of a community, global community of thousands of awesome, smart, kind-hearted, good women. And I was like, oh, that's what I want? I didn't know that that's what I wanted. Okay, well, that resonates. I guess that is what I want. Then I better get started, you know? And so that's actually what eventually led me to create TikTok content, because it was September. September was almost over. It was almost the next year. And I thought, wait, I said I wanted this thing and I haven't done anything. Where can I start to build this audience? Well, most likely TikTok, because where else can you go viral these days, right? So that's actually how I started posting on TikTok. So I would challenge people listening. If you feel like every area of your life is perfect, then good for you. But if you feel like you're not where you want to be, then sit down, create some space, and maybe with a notebook, ask yourself, what would a perfect typical day in my life be? And just really visualize every single detail from morning to night. And what is there? And where are you now compared to this perfect day in your life, right? And what do you need to start doing? Even just one step to get a little bit closer to that vision. And it might require some honesty and discipline and courage. And if there's a 100-day challenge in there, then do it, because obviously I'm a proponent of that. But that's where it needs to start. So I would encourage everybody to do that exercise.
Dalma, it has been such a pleasure. I'm so grateful to have known you, to have spent this hour with you, and just to experience the love and discipline and ability to communicate your thoughts. I'm so grateful for you.
Thank you. Thank you for this.
Where can we send people to connect with you?
Send them to my podcast, which is going to be popping off, I promise. So due diligence. And then my TikTok is the place where I'm most active. So TikTok.com/IamDalma is my handle. And there I nerd out about business and brands. So
linked below. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.